First today, public transportation. A lot of people support the idea in the abstract, but how do you channel that support into a solid investment in public transit? Jarrett Walker is an independent transit consultant who's in town today to speak at the Kansas City Regional Transit Association luncheon. He's also the author of a book, Human Transit, How Clearer Thinking About Public Transit Can Enrich Our Communities and Our Lives. His message, Kansas City shouldn't give up on expanding streetcars following that big defeat of a plan in August. Jarrett Walker, welcome. So good to have you in Kansas City.
Thanks very much, Steve.
Well, voters here in August, as I just mentioned, Jarrett, rejected by 60% the first step of a plan to expand our streetcar system. The plan received support along the Main Street corridor, but East Side residents resoundingly said no thanks. As someone who's worked in Portland and Seattle and Minneapolis and Sydney, what should this community be thinking about now, Jarrett, going forward?
I think this is a very common problem, and it's a very common crisis to be at in the development of public transit. How we approached this in Portland was a little different, and it's important to remember that Portland began with a really, really, really good bus system. It had a high-frequency bus grid all over the core city. I was around as a teenage intern when that was put in 1982. And it completely transformed mobility in Portland long before we laid the first rail line.
And that's a more sophisticated system than we have here in Kansas City?
A bit more. The key idea about a high-frequency grid is that you've got north-south and east-west services that are all coming very frequently. So you have this sensation that the service is always coming whenever you need it. That's really the essence of the sensation of liberty and the possibility of spontaneity. And we discovered very quickly that we were perfectly willing to ride buses if they were so fantastically useful, and many people did. We then laid in rail lines into that system, partly in response to where the bus system was already succeeding. And although the rail lines have obviously galvanized more development and they're logical as a faster, higher order form of transit for moving through the network, I think it's a very important part of the story that the bus system was right and that we began by really, really caring about the total bus system. And part of that, too, was just that we weren't fixated on a particular technology. Rail has this great advantage that it can carry more people per driver, but and that it's certainly able to deliver a higher speed and reliability when it's out of traffic. But it's the total network and how the pieces of the network that fit together that really create people's sense of liberty and opportunity.
But again, your message is buses came first and a system that was responsive to the needs of the community it was serving.
Right. It was not initially a conversation about what technology is best in the abstract. We only have conversations about what technology is best in a specific corridor within a whole network. And we were always trying to focus on the whole network.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead.
Well, here in Kansas City, then, we have this starter line coming in 2.2 miles from the River Market to Crown Center, and then it's going to stop, and we're looking at years down the road before we might possibly see an extension. So at this point, then, we have this thing going. What should we be thinking about?
Well, let's be realistic about what you're building when you build a streetcar in mixed traffic. The streetcar in mixed traffic is really quite profoundly different from what we mean by light rail, which is service that is protected from traffic congestion and which therefore can run extremely reliably. Mm. In Portland, we're very clear on the difference because we have both, and everybody has experienced the difference. The light rail system runs remarkably reliably. It's our actual backbone, high-volume network that moves people across the dense parts of the region and out into the suburbs a bit. Our streetcar is really a downtown redevelopment tool. It consists of very short lines. The longest of them is about is almost 5 miles, but most people use it to ride a much shorter distance.
Mm-hmm.
And the streetcar has these profound limitations. Even when you compare it to a bus in the same situation, the difference is that when you're in mixed traffic, when you're encountering causes of delay in your lane, there are lots of situations that a bus can go around where the streetcar gets stuck because, of course, the streetcar has no ability for lateral motion. And you see this all the time. The person who parks carelessly and is sticking, you know, 1/4 inch into the streetcar's right-of-way can shut down a streetcar, will not shut down a bus line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of why I think that this idea of the streetcar in mixed traffic may be starting to reach its limits in America. Certainly in Portland, for example, We recently did a poll of Portland residents. Obviously, we've been living with a streetcar longer than with a mixed traffic streetcar longer than anyone except the historic cities like New Orleans. And what we found, the question was, you know, do you assign a high priority to any of these different kinds of transportation improvements? And the answers on the transit questions were that 38% of Portlanders would assign a high priority to extending our mixed traffic streetcars, 38%. 59% assign a high priority to improving our light rail system, and 67% assign a high priority to further improving our frequent bus network. Now, that isn't – you can misread that. That isn't actually a war between technologies. I think what people are really saying there is that it's not just about the technology. It's about what actually works for getting us to lots of places.
So getting all sort of crazy excited about a new technology – you're sort of suggesting that we need to temper that a little bit, that that's not the panacea that people might be thinking that it's going to be.
Exactly. What's actually going to make transit take off in this city is the right technology in the right place for the right as the right tool. Mm-hmm. But you can't start just with the technology. You have to start with what kind of total network you want. Mm-hmm. You have to ask questions like, for somebody sitting here where we're sitting now or anywhere else in the city, where is it important that they be able to get to quickly on transit and have that conversation about the total network outcome? Because that's really what gets people excited about transit, is when it actually transforms their lives.
When it's really working and it's helping people, you know, live their lives better every day.
The other thing that's very important is that you have to have a very different attitude about the whole spectrum of incomes. Obviously, in the real estate world, many people are focused on a relatively affluent customer and are inclined to design specifically around that customer. But how transit actually succeeds is across the whole spectrum of incomes, and recognizing that in many cases, the lower income person is going to be the early adopter. And just as in high tech, we talk about the early adopter being the person who made it possible for the service to be further developed to the point that it's useful to those of us who aren't ready to take those risks.
Yeah.
And really, we have to respect the role of low-income people in your community in doing that. And so although it's normal to talk about the distribution of transit across the city as a question of justice or equity or something like that, I have a slightly different perspective on it, which is that it's good for the total transit network and for all of our transit outcomes citywide for us to be making sure that lower-income people are having services that really, really make transit the logical choice for them.
Yeah.
Think about how a low-income family may encounter the point where their kid is turning 16 and they have to decide whether to buy him a car or save for him to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Which would we all rather they do, ultimately,
in
that situation?
Yeah. You described a few minutes ago, Jarrett, the streetcar system as a downtown economic development tool. So are you suggesting there that running a streetcar line, if in our town, downtown is like 15th or 18th Street, should we be thinking about running a streetcar line all the way out to 75th Street, or does that not make any sense?
The challenge with the line you've built, that you're building now, is that it is going to be beautiful and exciting and people are going to love it, but it's going to be fairly slow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to have reliability issues because it's in mixed traffic. And the problem with it, with both speed and frequency, is that the further we're going, the more important speed becomes to us, the more important reliability becomes to us. And as a result, I doubt that many people are going to be willing to ride from downtown to 63rd Street on something that's as slow as this starter line is going to be. They're going to want something faster. The MAX BRT system already is that to some degree. And so I expect what you're probably going to see is more of a focus on understanding what MAX is already doing, understanding what those rapid buses are already doing, and seeing how you build toward an eventual rail project, first by just building up those and making them more and more attractive and useful. And then also, I think the other point is that we have all of these beautiful north-south corridors that we want to talk about, but and it's good that your measure did include some important east-wests like Linwood and Independence and so on, but that ultimately it's the total grid. It matters that what the east-west services are that are going to bring you to the main streets. That was the lesson of Portland. The high-frequency, really useful bus grid was actually there first.
Huh. Jared Walker is our guest. He's an independent transit consultant who's in town today to speak at the Kansas City Regional Transit Association luncheon. He's also the author of a book, Human Transit, How Clearer Thinking About Public Transit Can Enrich Our Communities and Our Lives. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. You know, out here, Jared, we are in, you know, the heartland, obviously, where we have these incredibly wide open spaces. That's made public transit cost prohibitive for a lot of people. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that and if you see that changing as views toward mass transit, not only here but around the world, evolve.
Here's what all of our elected officials have to think about when you're thinking at the scale of these giant urban regions. The answer to whether transit is a good thing, the answer to what you can expect out of transit, the answer to how useful transit will be, that is going to be different in different parts of the region. One of the common mistakes that our leaders often bring to this is they bring this notion that there ought to be some sort of transit product that is useful to everyone in every situation and that it gets to every corner of the region, no matter how remote. And unfortunately, that's just not how the math of the product
works. It's an urban tool here, you say.
Transit responds exponentially to high urban density, walkable neighborhoods, all the linear paths that it can follow. And so transit is going to thrive most, and it is going to be most liberating in those parts of your region. When somebody asks me what's the potential for transit in a particular urban region, my first question back is, how big were you in 1945?
Because
before 1945, all urban development was transit-oriented development. All urban development was fundamentally walkable, high density, and built mostly around logical, linear, and street grids that are easy for transit to use. So up until 1945, everybody was building the kind of development that's ideal for transit because transit was the primary mode then.
Mm-hmm.
So it's futile to imagine going into the 21st century that those parts of the region aren't going to be the places where transit is going to succeed. And one of the dangers of going too quickly to trying to have something for everyone all over the region is that we prohibit our transit agencies from really focusing on the places where their service will be most overwhelmingly successful, just on their bottom line.
You know, a lot of people out here, you know, Jared, you hear this all the time. They say, well, Kansas City is an automobile town. We don't need it. You know, there's still a lot of people here who say we don't need it, we don't want it, it's too expensive. Why bother? And you say,
well, it depends on what part of the region you live in.
Mm-hmm.
And there are large parts of this region that are entirely car dependent.
Mm-hmm.
Much of what has been built after World War II, especially where entire neighborhoods have been built after World War II, it's going to be very difficult to retrofit a useful transit service to those places. In fact, in many cases, it's just geometrically impossible. So we do have to have a realistic conversation about what are the parts of the region where transit will succeed. And it shouldn't surprise you that those are also the parts of the region where transit tends to be popular.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who've chosen to live in neighborhoods like Brookside, in neighborhoods like Westport, or even just along a street like Independence Avenue, where you have a nice, straight, easy corridor where transit can work well, even if it's just a bus, you know, they've chosen with some awareness that transit's going to be possible to them. So I think the future is not to try to force transit on everyone, but rather to give people the tools to recognize that certain areas are going to be very transit reliant, do have the potential to be really good transit, have really good transit. And then it's the beauty of everybody's free choice in a free society to mm-hmm. decide whether they want to live in those places. There'll be plenty of places that you can live and have a car-oriented lifestyle if you don't want anything to do with transit.
Yeah.
There will also be places where you can choose to live if you really want transit. Now, the bigger story then is that we have to listen to the free market.
Yeah.
And the free market is telling us that these inner cities that have really great transit are starting to become really attractive, and money is flowing into them.
I was going to say, but what you hear from transit advocates, from streetcar advocates, is that young people these days, they don't want to ride buses, Jared. They don't want anything to do with them, and that's why there's such a focus and such a push on going with the streetcar system, because younger folks won't ride anything else.
I think that's older folks speculating about younger folks, quite honestly.
Do you?
Here's the distinctive thing about younger folks. They grew up with smartphones. They grew up with information technology. They know how to use technology to optimize their options. And when you go to a big Western city that has lots and lots of transit and where we know how to optimize it, what I watch young people doing is figuring out which vehicle is actually going to get them where they're going, because what they really want to do is get on with their lives. So I think this notion that young people are the source of this technology bias, that's just not something I've encountered. I hear that in older people talking about younger people. I don't actually hear that from younger people very often.
816-235-2888. We're talking Kansas City transit in general. Let's go to some calls. And Mike from Lawrence. Mike, welcome.
Thanks for taking my call. My younger brother went to school in downtown Portland, lived at 16th and Burnside, right in the thick of things, and lived out in Hawthorne. And I remember the streetcars going by his place and then going over to Powell's Books, but I also remember being able to catch the light rail to go from Hawthorne clear to the airport without even having to bother just getting on a train and going to the airport, literally. And until Kansas City figures out something like that where you can go downtown and then hop on light rail and go out to the airport, or figure out some way to integrate the streetcars and the light rail and develop a really good east-west, north-south arterials, we're galaxies behind Portland. I can say the same thing having ridden the L all over Chicago in 48 hours to see a Cubs game in May, going from our airport clear out by O'Hare up to Wrigley and then over to Lincoln Park. We're just light years behind.
One thing in response to that, we all need to learn to distinguish between the kinds of transit experiences that we have as tourists and as visitors to a city and the kind of transit experience we're going to expect in our own city. It's very common when we go to another city, and especially when we go to a city that's famous for transit, we make a point of riding around on the beautiful rail system. And obviously, most tourists to Chicago know about Chicago's L. But the two cities you mentioned there, Portland and Chicago, both have this in common. They have fantastically intensive bus system grids. And the bus systems are actually very important. You mentioned the Hawthorne District in Portland. It doesn't have rail. It's gentrifying very rapidly to 3 and 4 stories, becoming very expensive, entirely based on just a really, really frequent bus line. And, of course, bus lines that connect to the rail system. But the important thing when you actually analyze a place like Hawthorne in Portland, fantastically successful redevelopment story, tell you a funny story about it. I was raised by starving artists, and I remember visiting a starving artist friend of my mother in 1972 who lived in an old, decrepit Adams Family Victorian. And it was one of the worst neighborhoods in the city. It was very dangerous. And when I realized that that was 35th and Hawthorne, and that, you know, that house now costs $2 million, I mean, it's an amazing story about what's happened there. But that's happened in the context of just a really useful transit system, rather than a focus so much on this has to be rail, that has to be a streetcar. That's really how Portland got going as a transit city, was on the whole bus system. And the same is true of Chicago. The L is your radial system into the loop. But of course, Chicago is a great grid, and there's a great bus system that's moving people in high volumes along this grid, which is part of why the next big thing in Chicago is now bus rapid transit on some of these big crosstown streets like Western and Ashland, where they're moving such colossal numbers of people. You see, once you're moving colossal numbers of people in buses, the case for improvement, the case for the exclusive lane, it all becomes a lot easier. It's a very different conversation then.
Yeah, Michael, thanks for the call. Let's go to Stephanie from Lawrence. Stephanie, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thanks. I'm actually from Kansas City.
Okay.
I grew up there, and I moved from there 20 years ago. I spent roughly half my life in both places. And honestly, I never rode the bus in Kansas City until I was in my 40s and had moved to Lawrence, because we have a bus system here in Lawrence that started in 2001, the same year I got rid of my car. And also roughly a year or two after I'd been in Brazil and experienced the bus system there, which is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And, I used to think of an 8-hour bus ride between cities was just horrific. I thought, how in the world would anybody do that? But after being there and seeing how great the buses are, and then coming back and then not having a car within a year or two after I came back, it was interesting. And my mom lives in Kansas City, and I take the bus to go see her, and I have to switch buses 3 times.
This is between Lawrence and Kansas City you're talking about.
Yeah, North Kansas City, where my mom lives.
And so your question is what, Stephanie?
So my question is a couple of things. First of all, about one thing I've noticed about the bus system in Lawrence, which is small, considerably smaller in some ways than Kansas City, you know, the metropolitan area of Kansas City, how to make it more attractive in a smaller place like Lawrence. I mean, we do have the bus system. They finally combined the KU University bus system and the city
right.
bus system, which helped. And there is a K-10 connector, but, for example, the Saturday bus is gone. So if I want to visit relatives, I have to stay a whole weekend, and if I have to work
Monday, so your question is about how to make bus service a little more useful in a smaller town like Lawrence?
Yeah, and also about his opinion about connecting, like making something that connects regional centers. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, I got you. Go ahead, Jared.
Oh, huge complicated question. My whole career, my whole consulting practice is really about helping cities think more creatively about buses and make them more useful. You know, obviously, Lawrence, you're very fortunate. You're in a university town. Universities drive enormous amounts of transit demand. Those are real low-hanging fruit. You ought to be able to have an excellent bus system in Lawrence, and you ought to be able to have one that really is interesting and engaging and self-advertising to a broad spectrum of the population. I think that one of the downsides we have about buses in America is that we've let ourselves think about them too much as just a very generic, basic product mm-hmm. that all looks sort of the same. A lot of my work is about helping transit agencies present their service in a way that causes the really useful services to jump out at you. That's why I advocate, for example, drawing maps of just the high-frequency network so people can see everywhere they can get to if they're not able to wait for very long, for
mm-hmm.
example.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of great tools like that, and I certainly encourage you to explore my book, Human Transit, my blog, humantransit.org. Look at the frequent networks category, for example. We talk a lot about some of the things that can be done to make bus service look like something more than an ordinary bus and to help people see how incredibly useful it can really be.
I'm going to get to two final points, Jared, before you hit the door here. This notion that we're having this conversation just as the federal government is pulling back on resources, federal money not as available as it used to be, strikes me as a huge impediment for cities like Kansas City that want to weigh in here more aggressively than we have in recent years with more expensive kinds of systems. Am I seeing that correctly? Is our timing just off here, or am I not seeing it right?
I think we have to accept that federal funding is going to be what it's going to be. There's a positive side to this. It puts you more in the situation that Canadian cities are in, where they have to raise all of their funding pretty much at their local and provincial level.
Wow.
The downside of that is that you have to talk about larger local taxes. The upside of that, though, is that your whole conversation gets to be more local, and you spend less of your time taking care of the requirements of the feds, more time having your own conversation, building your own consensus. Canadians come to me all the time and say, you know, I wish we had a giant federal funding bureaucracy like the FTA. But I say to them, you know, you have this advantage. You don't spend a lot of time taking care of your federal funding sources. You spend more of your time having your own local conversation, building your own consensus.
But I guess what I'm driving at, though, is this notion that streetcar systems, you know, large streetcar systems, large light rail systems, to some extent, are they off the table now for a town like Kansas City, given the massive costs here?
Well, no, they just mean that you have to have a local conversation. And a local conversation can lead to whatever funding is necessary to do whatever you agree to locally. If there's less money raining down from the feds, it means both more. You know, I mean, yes, it's going to be – that means things are going to be more expensive to do locally, but they're also going to be – but, you know, you're going to have to build the consensus to do them. I do think that in the absence of the big federal infrastructure funding, it takes us back to what I think, frankly, is good planning anyway, which mm-hmm. is to focus on the incremental improvements, the more affordable, gradual improvements, which can do so much for transit. Just a really good high-frequency bus grid can do so much for this city, even as you're waiting for – And what that will do also is build the understanding, build the sophistication in the population
yeah.
to the point that when you're ready to propose the big rail project again, it will be more obvious that it's time to do that.
Just a final point then. If I'm hearing you correctly today from our very good conversation, I hear you saying that maybe this would be a good time for Kansas Cityans to sit back and call time out and sort of take a really hard look at where we are and where we need to be.
I think if you are going to go to the voters again, you need to go to them with a total story about how this improves everybody's transit. And I think that may have been what was missing last time. And that total story is a story about all the different modes, not just about one particular technology. Every technology can have a role, But it's got to be the right tool for the right situation and not present it as the panacea or the savior, because that's never how it works. It's the total network made up of all the technologies that ultimately liberates people.
Jared Walker is an independent transit consultant. His book, again, Human Transit, Clearer Thinking About Public Transit Can Enrich Our Communities and Our Lives. I really enjoyed having you, Jared. Thanks so much. Enjoy your time in Kansas City.
Thank you, Steve.